So we've been talking about climate change action that will be coming up this Friday, and now let's turn to an assessment of what went down just last Friday at City Hall. A week ago on the Old Mole, Bill Resnick talked with three young people, two of them local high school students, about their plans and hopes for Friday's climate strike action, or for that Friday's action. Now Bill is back to review the results with Jenna Paris, Jackson Calhoun, and Sriya Chinnan, who also worked on the event. Here's Bill.
Hi, folks out there in Radio Land. Yesterday, around the world, and Portland too, will likely be remembered as the Great Climate Strike, organized by the Youth of the Planet, millions and millions of young people and adults too, rallying and marching in over 150 countries, demanding that the powers that be act to stop climate change and global warming. That climate science demonstrates will ultimately lead to human extinction. But we can, of course, stop that. It'll require dramatic change, near, in fact, complete transformation of how we produce, consume, and live. There are important forces in the world who don't want to change. It's going to be a great struggle in the future. And you folks around the table are going to be involved in that for quite a while, I believe. And it's wonderful work, because the possibilities of what the change could bring would do a lot for human fulfillment and happiness. So today in the studio, like last week, but with a slightly different cast, I have Portland students, Jenna Paris, Sriya Chinnan, and Jackson Calhoun. We're going to discuss the strike, what it accomplished, and what must come next. Jenna, Jackson, Sriya, first introduce yourself and discuss your role in the Portland climate strike. Who wants to go first?
Hi, my name is Jenna Paris. I'm a junior at Cleveland High School. Along with Sriya and Jackson and a few others, we were all some of the main youth organizers of the climate strike that happened yesterday.
Yeah, I'm Jackson Calhoun. I use he, him pronouns. I go to Rex Putnam High School. I'm a sophomore. Exactly what Jenna said. Specifically, I worked a lot on logistics, and then that got boring. So I did some stuff with press towards the end and a lot of work at my school.
Unlike Portland Public Schools, it sort of allowed you not to attend school with Rex Putnam didn't go along with that program, but you did organize a rally in the school. A strike rally. How did that go?
Yeah, that went really well. Better than I was expecting. I'd say like 200 students probably walked out, and then out of that, probably 20 went into Portland. I was very proud of what we did at our school.
My name is Sriya Chinnan. I'm a senior at Lincoln High School. Yeah, I've just been working with these amazing youth activists for the past, like, I think it's been a month and a half now. For planning the strike that happened yesterday, I did outreach for a while, and I also organized in my school. We had 1,100 students walk out from Lincoln, although I can't discount that Lincoln is one of the most more economically and racially privileged schools.
It's so. Also very nearby.
Exactly.
And you have some wonderful faculty at Lincoln.
Yes.
Did you folks have teachers who in classes where you studied climate change?
At Cleveland, the chemistry teachers on their own decided that they were going to teach climate justice as a unit within their sophomore chemistry classes, because they felt like it was imperative that the students were learning about it. But it was something that they decided to do on their own. It wasn't from the district, and it wasn't from any higher direction. They decided it all on their own, and they wrote it all, and they taught it to the students, but it was only the sophomore chemistry classes that got that.
What about Rex Putnam?
I have not learned anything about climate justice at Rex Putnam, which is sad. Our demand to our school was to do what Portland Public Schools is doing, except faster, with the climate justice curriculum, and I don't know what's going to happen with that. They said, oh, we're already doing it, and then, yeah, I doubt that.
Let's talk about the march. I found it really inspiring and wonderful and deafening, however. There
yes.
really was a lot of noise coming out of that full block
of
people.
Lots of good noise.
Yeah.
Yeah, how did you? You must have felt really good.
Yeah, we were expecting about 6,000 to 8,000 people to show up, and I think over 20,000 people showed up. And that was super inspiring. I was really proud of my city.
That entire, like, yesterday, I like blacked out through that experience. It was absolutely surreal. It was awesome.
So I think it was like the best day of my life because it was so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, people everywhere are getting involved.
Yeah.
That's the amazing thing. All around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I know the strike wasn't a one-time thing. This is a one step in a what will be a long struggle and a building of movements. Tell us what's going on in Portland just to keep things going, but how you see this long struggle.
Well, on Tuesday, Portland has several things happening. There's the vigil at Zenith starts, for one thing, and that's going to be 60 hours long, so if anyone wants to go to that, they definitely should, because we need to stop Zenith, and that's one thing we need to do.
Before you continue, I just want to interject that you don't have to be there for all 60 hours. That's an important note. I'm definitely not going to be there all 60 hours. I think it's like three-hour shifts, or even if you went for 1 hour, people would be like, you're amazing. So,
come show your support.
Yeah.
Where is Zenith on the map?
It's the sidewalk near the Zenith Energy Facility, which is at 5501 Northwest Front Avenue. It'll start Tuesday, September 24th at 7 a.m., and it'll end on 7 p.m. at September 26th.
On Thursday.
And we're stopping tar sands oil coming through Portland. There's something also happening this Friday, I believe.
This Friday, there is
a rally at City Hall.
It's called About Time, Act Now on the Climate Crisis Rally at City Hall. And there's going to be street theater there. It's from 12 to 2. And it's the end of the week of climate actions. And it's basically to just tell the city we're not going away and we're holding it accountable to put forward concrete actions with real timelines to reach net zero fossil fuel emissions by 2030. There will be a lot of organizations there, like Extinction Rebellion, 350PDX,
Sunrise.
Oh, good. So this is sort of a continuation and an announcement that this is not ended. We're continuing.
Yes. We will be following this strike with a week full of action, and there's more information for that on climatestrikeoregon.org. Visit it, join a group, go to these events, learn more.
I'm talking to three veterans of the, still in high school, veterans of the struggle who were organizing this amazing climate strike rally in March on Friday, September 20th. And we've been discussing the immediate future in Portland. Let's talk about the long-term future. Corporate America recognizes that the threat of climate change and then the demand for a Green New Deal are becoming much more popular. It's come out of the ashes, risen from the ashes of the old to begin challenging the entirety, actually, of the production system. They recognize they're in trouble, and I believe they also think that, and in fact, I'm sure of it, they also think that climate change could be another profit center. And the Green New Deal, if it appropriates $500 billion or $1 trillion as part of sort of an infrastructure project, whatever it would be, whatever they call it, there's really good money to be made. I'm afraid that all those monies may flow to corporate America rather than flowing to the cities. Change has to come to the cities, how they produce, consume, how people live. There has to be dramatic changes. Those have to come in the population areas of the country, and those are the cities. And so I think that, when we have a Green New Deal, at least the Ocasio-Cortez Green New Deal and the Bernie Sanders Green New Deal, envision those cities taking control of their energy supply as well as changing their transit systems, their building systems. To what extent have you folks been thinking about the question of who's going to control the Green New Deal? Where is the money going to go? Is it going to go to the investor-owned utilities, or is it going to go to the cities to create much cheaper and quicker to build and easier to repair off-the-shelf energy systems?
I think many would probably call me a dreamer, but when I envision a Green New Deal, I envision that the power is with the people, and I envision that states and cities are making their own decisions.
Yeah, I think, as you said, this is Ocasio-Cortez and Sanders' Green New Deal. So I think obviously when they were trying to get this bill passed, I don't think that the envision was for this all to go to corporate America. I think it's definitely, the hope is for it to all go to the cities and go to the people, as Shreya said.
The cities and the countryside and the tribes and all the affected people with a climate justice vision. and jobs in the cities, too, not in building this humongous grid that there's only a few construction companies that can do it and huge engineering firms. In the cities, the city grid and the city installations can be built by anybody who's ever built a kitchen or a home. All the trades can easily put up solar panels. Putting up a huge grid across mountains and rivers and the rest, doing a lot of environmental damage in the process because it has to be highly secure and highly engineered and take a long time to do, that's another matter. Jackson, are those issues alive in the movement?
Well, I wanted to speak to your last question about who we want to be benefiting and controlling the Green New Deal, and I wanted to say I think the frontline communities and the indigenous leaders need to have their voices very much listened to and respected, and they should be the ones leading this all, because they're the ones that most affected, and for indigenous people, they know the land best. The whole goal, I think, is to decolonize and decorporatize. So in trying to transition to a more sustainable world, we have to make sure that we're not doing it in a way that is making us more colonized.
I think engaging the frontline communities is something that's incredibly important, as Jackson's talking about, decolonizing. Mm-hmm.
I mean, with colonization came the idea that, came greed and came corporate America. It started with colonization to corporate America. There's a lot of similarities, and in order to really grow and in order to give the power back to the people that this land is, they are part of the land, we must continue to decolonize ourselves.
And decorporatize and democratize, I think. It's not impossible, because there's a lot of cities already in the country and the world who have, in fact, moved very close to zero carbon, not in all of their transport. It's all the automobiles and buses and things aren't all electric. But in lots of ways, they produce clean energy within 50 miles of the city. Some big installations, some bigger installations, many smaller installations, and they also conserve energy rather than being so wasteful. And the capital costs then go way down because you don't have to build as many installations. There are many cities that do it. Have you folks studied these possibilities? Because we do have models.
I know that in Copenhagen, they have shifted the culture around biking and have pushed biking rather than using your car, and have, it's called the Copenhagen method, where they have the sidewalk, they have the bike lane, and then they have parked cars, and then they have the driving lane, so bikers feel more comfortable and they feel safer when they bike. And that's actually encouraged a lot of people to use their bike around Copenhagen.
Yeah, it's so much healthier, too. Mm-hmm. People now enjoy life and enjoy breathing.
Yeah.
There are so many gains. They also have electrified transit systems all over Europe, actually. Mm-hmm. And they also have long-distance trips that are very efficient and fast and clean. I hope you sort of begin engaging in the issues that I've tried to raise. It would be good to look at those possibilities, the ways in which our cities, and led by the people who are most effective, they have to have a powerful voice in the movements. But the city movements are also extremely important, city movements around transit and around the way we produce our energy and who controls it and who profits from it and the jobs that are created. All of those are going to be great struggles within the cities and countryside. It's really important to not be fooled when they say, we have a $500 billion program for doing a smart grid. It's going to be great for everybody.
I think we've definitely been learning to be skeptical through this process of just being activists. We're definitely skeptical. I think that through this process, we have all learned to be very skeptical of what we hear from many adults and from many bureaucracies.
Yeah, it's a constant struggle to just be doing this work. They always make a lot of promises, you know, but you can't really trust everything that they say. There's a lot of empty promises, and there's a lot of oh, no, we support you guys totally, but there's no action behind those words, and there's
And they never really want you to know that they have made these decisions because of us and because of this movement. They're just oh my God, this is happening, but they don't really ever give us credit or recognition. So strikes and movements like this are crucial for the political process.
Yes.
Thanks.
I don't know if this is going to cut or not, but I'm going to just say it. To everyone out there in Radio Land, I just want to say that you guys all have the power to make a difference. No one is too small to make a difference. As Greta Thunberg, a 16-year-old Swedish activist, has said, join a group, go to climatestrikeoregon.org, and go to these events. The power is in you.